Welcome back to Don't Cut a Book Club. My name is Luke.
My name is Dan Quintus. Ooh.
Ooh, you reached Quintus.
I got to Quintus, Magnus, and Carlson, or whatever.
Uh-huh. Yep. All that makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. Okay, new book day. We're starting The Will of the Many by James Islington. Let me get us warmed up with a little bit of a rant.
Okay.
I'm going to do another travel rant because this is all we do now, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We're travelers. We're world travelers now.
That's right. So, okay. I don't normally check a bag.
Ooh, okay.
But the most recent time I did, and every now and then they'll make you check one, right? And then so you have to go pick it up at baggage claim.
Yeah.
And I don't have a problem with that. It never takes that long. It's like fine.
Yeah.
The problem that I have is with the other people at baggage claim.
Ooh. Oh, I know
exactly
where. Yeah.
I walk to baggage claim and I am like standing back.
Right.
20 feet or so.
Yes.
Because I can see. And like, I'm not going to go up to the conveyor until I see my bag. No one else uses
yes.
this logic.
The rules have
Everyone
broken
else
down.
Is
yes.
like, I have to stand on the conveyor, basically. And then there's like, it's like a few people do that.
Yeah.
And then other people are like, well, those people are now blocking my view.
Yes.
So now I need to get closer to be able to see the bags.
Yes.
And then it just leads to everyone standing there. And then it's like, well, I can't see my bag now.
Yep.
And when I do, I can't get through you guys. It's driving me nuts.
Yes. Yes.
You don't have to stand there.
Yes.
Ah.
I think the other thing about this, which is so annoying, is sometimes I have a very big bag. Sometimes if I'm checking a bag, it's because I need to bring a lot of stuff with me.
Yeah.
So it's a big bag. And people are like crowding around the carousel.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, excuse me, like I need to get in here to get my bag. And I tend to make a big show of it. I tend to like really like, huh, and like swing it like I don't have control over the bag, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I'm like, back up. Like, they'll make enough space for like me to stand there. And it's like, no, I'm not. I'm getting my bag. I don't need to stand here right at the carousel. Give me some space, please.
Right. What I've started doing is because a lot of time in this scenario, like my wife or somebody is coming to pick me up.
Yeah.
Right. And
yeah.
they've been in the cell phone lot and I'm on the phone with them.
Yes.
Either that or I fake being on the phone with them.
Yes.
And then I stand a few feet behind everyone and I go, yeah, everyone for some reason is standing right next to the conveyance belt. I don't get why people do this. And then I like talk shit about them a little bit on
That's,
the phone.
Do you really, you actually do that, Luke?
I've done that a couple
That's
times.
That's so good.
Because like this is more of a Dan move than a Luke move.
That's why I love it. I'm like, you're inspiring me, Luke. You're giving me inspiration.
it's one of the things that drives me the most angry to like actually do something like this.
Yeah.
Normally, again, as listeners will know, I normally would not do something like that, but I have to. They're forcing me to.
Yes, they are. He has no choice, folks. He has no choice. I mean, now you could say that this is an issue of how we design the space, and if they like put a little indication of where you're supposed to wait, like maybe people would do it because it's not really clear. Unless somebody tells you about how to do it, like you're just going to naturally kind of go up to the front if everyone else is going up to the front. So I get it. One of the other things that I will do sometimes is just not stand by the baggage carousel. I'll just like go wait somewhere else for like 10 minutes or so and then go over like at the very end when everyone's already gone because I just don't want to deal with everyone being there. The problem with my strategy is those rare instances where someone else has pulled my bag off the baggage carousel and I've had to take it out of their hands.
That's a tough one. That's never happened to me before.
It's always fun.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, Luke, this is horrible. is horrible. Okay, actually, I'm going off on this for a minute. You know what really bothers me about flying right now in 2025?
What's that?
How often you have to gate check your bag. And here's why it bothers me so much. There is literally a requirement about how much baggage you can bring on the plane because there is space for every single person in the row to fit their bag in the overhead compartment. Like, that's why they have limitations. So that when I get on the plane, I know I've got my little overhead space and I don't have to check my bag. I don't have to wait in that carousel because I packed appropriately. So I didn't check this bag. But I'm always at the end of the gate check process because one, who wants to get on the plane first? I think I've already done this rant, but I don't want to get on the plane first. And two, I'm not going to pay to get on early. You're asking me to pay $50 to get on like 5 minutes before everyone else. No, I'm not doing that. So inevitably, they're like, guys, we're going to have to start asking people to check bags. I want to be like, no, tell the people who are putting their carry-on and their personal item in the overhead that they need to pull that personal item out of the overhead because you can't put your purse and your checked bag in the overhead or your backpack and your checked bag in the overhead. It's not how it works. You're breaking the rules. It goes under your seat, under the seat in front of you.
That's right.
What are we... Guys!
I will say I think part of this is because... for some reason, there's like not enough space because of first class is what I've heard. I don't really understand the argument with this.
That doesn't make sense. Luke, that doesn't make sense. And here's why it doesn't make sense. The row of three seats has one overhead compartment for it that fits three suitcases. Like, they're sized for it already, guys. Right. They're already sized for it. We know that there's space. I know I have a special space at my seat for me because the thing is big enough for three.
This is true.
Get the backpacks out of there. Get the purses out of there. Stop it. When I see people putting it up there after they've announced the flight is very full, I'm like, I don't like you.
You're not at the point of confronting them, though.
No, but I do, like, if there's almost not enough space in a storage place, I will just, like, fully put my bag in, regardless of if I'm, like, smushing somebody's little tote or whatever the fuck.
Right.
I'm like, you...
I think that's fair.
Put it under the seat in front of you. I'm sick of it. And I get why this is a thing too, because if I'm a flight attendant post COVID, I am not gonna be asking anyone to do anything outside of like not brandish a weapon at another passenger. Like, but like, personal items don't go up there, guys. Come on,
folks.
Okay.
Oh, man.
All right. We finished our.
That's our bi-weekly travel rant.
It's our stand-up comedian airplane talk, which is like the way that wealthy stand-up comedians have to relate to normal people anymore is travel. That's right. So
you're welcome. We're no longer the normal people band.
That's right. We've got the Patreon. Now we got the Patreon. It's a bit different for us.
It's popping off, so okay. Let's do book, The Will of the Many. We're doing quarters for this book, so we will only be covering up to chapter 17.
Mm-hmm.
Is where we stopped. Dan, is this book giving you flashbacks to any other books that we've read?
You mean like a lot of them?
A lot of them, yes, but one in particular.
Are you talking about Babel?
No.
Because it's giving me a lot of Babel. It's giving me a lot of Red Rising.
I was thinking Red Rising. I can see why you're saying Babel because of the like training from an adopted father thing.
And the fact that it's like an empire that he has like been assimilated by and is sort of like trying to undermine. There was one more book that it was giving for me.
Trader Baru Cormorant.
That's exactly it. Yep. Thank you, Luke.
And let me be clear, I'm into it.
Oh, it's fun.
Because it's a good, tropes are a thing for a reason.
Is this a genre already? Like, have we reached a point where books about young boys or girls going to school to undermine a colonial empire, is that a genre now?
I mean, I think for, okay, so going to school under false pretenses is for sure a genre at this point.
Because there's just like so many. Well, and I mean, to make it more general, we could just say young people going to school for the first time and it being a lot more socially impactful than just you're in school.
Right.
But like, just the number of books is staggering. That's like young person goes to school. Like, of course, you've got your Harry Potters. You've got your Ender's Game. But it's just so many. We're going to school. And speaking of which, Luke, it gets me into my first note for this book.
Okay.
Why are we always going to school on a train? Have you noticed this? In...
You're counting this as a train?
Oh, come on. It's a train, Luke.
It's a plane. It's clearly a plane.
No, it's got one... Okay, first reason it's not a plane. There's no steering involved. It's just go or stop.
Okay. Is that true?
When he gets into the control panel, he's got like three levers, and one is eject the cargo. The other one is levitate, and the third one is go forward. There's like one other lever he doesn't know what to do.
Yeah, but that's crazy because that can't be. There's got to be another room.
No.
They segregate the steering compartment from the go department for
Luke,
sure.
No, because it goes to the anchor points. Like they follow straight lines between the anchor points. It's a track. They're on a track.
Okay, but the reason I was thinking plane, I think it gives more plane vibes. Like I recognize your point that it's on a track, but it's a why am I so into? I was going to say it's not mass transit, but I'm realizing that planes kind of are mass transit.
I also, Luke, want to clarify that this is mass transit because, I think there's most of the time it's, like, cargo, but they also do carry passengers. Like, okay. he was the only passenger on this one, and that was sort of an exception. That was sort of a new, like... Because it was like really new or something, they were the only ones on it. But I do think this is mass transit as well.
Okay. I think that the reason that I was leaning plane because you're swaying me was that this just feels very inefficient to me.
Yeah.
And like I refuse to relate anything train related.
I think it's insane to me.
It also levitates, so that's the other part of it.
Well, and I think this is the part that's so interesting to me that, it does feel really inefficient. Like, it feels like a better use of resources for it not to levitate, because, levitating something has to use a ton of energy and, the willpower or whatever it is. And it feels like you could instead invest that into building a track one time and then... And then it's fine.
Right.
But I guess they just have so much disposable. They have a lot of prisoners.
They do. Well, and just population.
Right. And so I guess it's just like willpower is so cheap that they're like, yeah, whatever. Just make it levitate.
So they do a little back of the napkin calculation for this. And I don't think it's right. I think they missed some things because what do you mean? It takes basically he says that it takes the strength of 50 men.
Is it 50?
It's something along those lines.
It's like what? 4, 32, 16 times 7. I can't do this math. I thought it was in the hundreds.
Was it? Even then. Yeah. I don't it feels like we're off by more than an order of magnitude.
Yes, it feels like we're off by several orders of magnitude to raise a giant stone and oak train up in the air and then traveling.
And then propel it at hundreds of miles per hour.
Correct.
This is the main thing, honestly. Yeah. Are we forgetting about wind resistance?
Well, look, you forgot the front has a really cool pyramid shape that's really aerodynamic.
Okay. This is true. This is true.
And so, and part of the will goes to actually like convincing the heir to get out of the way of the train. So it's actually sort of like
reviewing the heir ahead of time.
Mm-hmm. It's more of like a hyperloop situation, you know?
Okay. Sure.
So it's actually really efficient. You wouldn't get it though. It's sort of futuristic.
Okay. Okay. Fair point.
Speaking of, you mentioned earlier though that it was public transit. I have been thinking of this as public transit, and I honestly love the fact that like senators are taking like mass transit around this nation. That they're like, I get that this time they were on one by themselves, but I don't think that's normally the case. Like, I think normally there's other people on it. And I think it's just great that they're on
public transit. I'm going to start pushing back on the public transit use of this because, okay, you have to use the strength of lifting a person.
Mm-hmm.
But people are only giving up half of their willpower, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's just too inefficient to be using to be moving normal people around this way.
Yeah, but Luke, there's a lot of prisoners. Okay, they've got a lot of prisons.
Okay, okay.
Because I agree with Luke. Listen, I agree with you. The economics don't seem to work out very well for people's willpower, I guess.
Can we actually do? You want to spend a little bit of time going into how this works?
God, stuff? We really need to.
A little bit more. Like, I'm not sure if this is going to be spelled out more in detail later or not, but I just want to figure it out because, like, there's a difference between, like, willpower and energy.
Well.
And, like, physical strength, right? Is that what they're referring to?
No, I think they're talking about, okay, so my understanding, Luke, is that this will is sort of like an innate ability everybody has that's sort of the same, that's sort of at least similar among people.
Well, there is variation among people.
Is there?
Well, when they do the interviews, like a big part of the interviews is how much will can you give me?
Well, but that's about how much you can control, right?
Maybe.
Oh, I see what you're saying. How much can you give me? No, you're right. Okay. But let's say it's like similar. Okay.
Okay.
It's like relatively similar among people, I'm guessing. Can we start breaking down where this comes from? Because obviously it gets into this like system where they start funneling it up. And guys, you literally designed your society after a pyramid scheme. Like, what?
I know.
Come on, you guys. Who thought this was
okay. Let's go very base level of this.
Yeah. Where is it coming
from? Are we talking watts?
Gotta be.
Okay.
And I think...
They say when he's treating the prisoners, he says he feeds them much more than what he would eat. So it's like... Yeah, it's like breaking down food into energy.
It's got to be equivalent. It's got to be equivalent to energy. Yes.
Okay.
So, sources. We got to figure out sources and expenditures, right? In sappers, right? All the prisons, I think a lot of them are sapping the will from people.
Yes.
So that's one. Then there's the Aurora columnae. I don't know how that works at all because my guess was that they like pay you to give some of your will to the system.
Right.
But it doesn't seem that way because Viz keeps getting beaten for not doing it.
Right.
So.
But that's by
the matron, maybe.
By the matron. And that's kind of like under the table or something, because he would be giving it to her, I think.
I don't know how that works. Maybe. I guess. Yeah.
Okay. I'm gonna back us up like one more time and go big picture.
Yeah.
We're gonna hypothesize that the will comes from, it's like energy that humans produce.
Yes.
By, it has to be consuming food, right? Because otherwise,
the only way.
Unless we're like, I know there's magic in this, but like, he's already hinted that it's food related.
Yeah.
So like, we're losing efficiency here. It's not efficient to do this because we're growing food to feed everyone and then using half of their energy to do stuff with it. And so like, I recognize that this is like a technological marvel since they haven't discovered other stuff. And so like, yes, to do some things, certainly. Mm-hmm. But I have a hard time believing that the economics work out.
Well, okay, Luke, here's where we're starting to flesh this out a little bit though, right? Because we just learned as part of Viz's lessons, the thing that has enabled this empire to exist is their agricultural revolution. Apparently they had some very recent agricultural revolution that made it way easier to produce food. Uh-huh. And so maybe it is that food is just so cheap that it makes sense to levitate a train because the energy cost to produce the food to do it is relatively low, and the cost to like do it mechanically would be so much higher that it's like they can afford some inefficiencies in the system. You know what I mean?
Okay. I'm here for this. Yes.
And so I think we're starting to put that together with like how this empire works is like, it's all food based. You're right. Instead of being like a fossil fuel based empire, this one's just like, they figured out how to make corn grow really good, which turns out surprisingly is the same sort of thing, but we're not going to get into the food system on this pod.
You know what I'm actually realizing, and I'm starting to come around to the energy system.
Uh-huh.
Is it seems to me that we're at 100% like transfer efficiency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, gotta be. Otherwise, gotta be, Luke. Otherwise, the people at the top are getting way, way less will, right? Because okay, yes. Because if the transfer efficiency is even like 95% or something, if you multiply that going up the chain, you're losing so much efficiency as you go up each level.
Right.
So it's got to be close to 100%.
Presumably, if there were losses in transfer, it would be affected by distance, right? Oh, and they're traveling around all the time.
Yes.
So you would want to be close to the people giving you. So I don't think that there's losses, which is huge, because if we think about like a combustion engine, those things are like 30% efficient.
Huge.
Okay. I'm coming around.
Oh, man, Luke. And now imagine that you need to transfer a bunch of energy over a really long distance.
Mm-hmm.
Just imbue a bunch of will in a guy, have him get on the train.
Yeah.
Oh my. Luke, the energy density? Hold on. Because now we need to talk about the energy density.
Yes. Okay. Yes, please.
Because here's an important question, Luke. Does somebody get heavier when they're imbued with more will?
No, I don't think so.
Well, I mean, we only see one Quintus, and he seems to have some bulk to him.
I mean, they definitely get like sturdier.
Sure, but I'm talking about mass. Like,
right.
Like, are they appreciably gaining a lot of mass when they get a lot of will?
Let's say no. I'm going to say no.
I think no, too. And here's what I'm going to say for a little bit of extra evidence for that is I feel like if the university was so interested in not having people have will, they could just weigh everybody as they're walking in and being like, you've got some extra mass on you.
Well, also he lifts up when he rescues his adopted father, I forget his name. He picks him up and drags him.
Oh,
and
so true.
Considering the amount of will he has, it would have to be. So yes, I don't think that it adds mass. So energy density, continue.
the energy density is basically infinite at this point, because there doesn't, now we have, we are, it's unclear how much will a person can give and how much a person can accept. But if this is a form of energy, and if it's able to be used like a form of energy, you can just load somebody up and then have them travel a long distance and then do the work at some other location, instead of having to like build a pipeline or like a big oil tanker or something. This is incredible, Luke.
Right.
Like, the, it also doesn't sound like, so here's the other crazy thing about it. The train is powered by somebody who's not even near it, right? Because our, what is it? What is his name? Ol something? Our Quintus guy. Our Quintus. Oh. It's like Ulcrip or something? Ulcrin?
Yeah, it starts with a U.
Anyway. Anyway, Papa Quintus.
That's right.
They talk about how he's not the one powering the train.
Correct.
This is better than electricity, right?
Yes. In many ways, yes. The thing that I keep coming back to, though, is how much will can a person give off consistently?
Well,
because like going back, let's turn it into watts.
Yeah.
Okay. If I'm like riding a bike,
yeah,
a maintainable effort for, I don't know, an hour, let's say 100 watts.
Okay.
Is like not that much.
Yeah.
But it's a workout. Like,
yeah.
So realistically, what I'm just putting off normally.
Yeah.
When people are talking about like you need, you know, X amount of calories for a day, that's like you gotta be averaging like 10 watts or something, which is nothing.
But Luke, I think you're also ignoring the compute power that's going on.
Okay.
Which is harder to measure. Right, because like
so you're talking watts multiplied by some kind of coefficient.
Well, I'm talking about the fact that our brain consumes a fair number of calories,
right?
And that's much harder to turn into watts, because like it's easy for us to figure out like muscular watts because we could just hook you up to a bike,
right?
I'm talking about like your brain also is doing work. By consuming energy, doing work, and it sounds like the will that people are giving up is also affecting their mental faculties, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So
it sounds like what you're saying is that the mental aspect of it is a multiplier.
Yeah, that's what I'm assuming. Yeah.
Okay. I think that's probably fair.
But Luke. I'm okay. So obviously this society is set up as feels like very totalitarian, feels like very, you know, imperialist. I mean, it's Rome, so there's a Senate technically, but it's like pretty the what are the Octavi? Is that the people at the bottom?
Yeah, it's, yeah, something like that.
Basically slaves, right? Like required to punish their bodies in grueling labor because they have no other option. I feel like you could do this in a good way. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like you could have a system that will isn't just exploitative. And here's what I mean, Luke. This is just work, right? Like, this is just labor that you could do.
Yeah.
So like, but it's cooler than that, because you could be like, maybe there's a petition that goes around that's like, hey, we want to go to the moon and we need a bunch of will to power the spaceship. So you can come to the little will donation shop down the street and like give us a bunch of will. And when we get this level, then we'll go to the moon and it'll be super cool. And you could just go. You could just be like, yeah, that sounds great. I want to go participate in that.
Right.
And just like, give it up freely, maybe. I don't know. I just think it's a cool system, and it doesn't need to be this way, guys.
Sure. Yes, I agree with you. It could be done more ethically, certainly.
Like, now maybe all these people are volunteering, but
it doesn't seem like it. Like, if there was fair compensation for it, then sure.
Mm-hmm.
I guess.
Well, but then we have to ask the question, Luke, like, is fair compensation possible in a society where there's such wealth disparity?
Well, I mean, I'm assuming that the fair compensation would be
by the people that run the society, Luke? Yeah.
No, me. In this hypothetical.
Okay, fair enough.
Or just, hey, let's give you guys more food.
What if it was directly proportional to how good the meal was they had just eaten?
Okay.
Have they done any studies? See, here's what the problem with how the society works is. It sounds like they're commodifying will, and in doing so, negating any of the differences between individual sources. They're turning it into a commodity, so it's mm-hmm. homogenous across the board. But as we've seen, Luke, there are variations in the amount of will. At least it seems like there are variations in the amount of will that you can cede. Now,
right.
What we lose is this understanding of how do we optimize will here? Like, maybe working conditions get a little better, the food becomes more nutritious, maybe becomes more delicious, your will goes up, your efficiency goes up. But by commodifying it, we've just completely... I feel like I'm talking about food systems a lot this episode. I've just been reading a lot about food systems in the US, so that's like on my brain right now. But by commodifying it, we... like, get rid of all the nuance, and it's less effective. It's less efficient.
Okay, yes. This is just going to be a ridiculous episode. But let's get more in the weeds once again. Because if what we've hypothesized is true,
yeah,
that, like, a lot of this is based on just energy, but then, like, the brain part of it is a bit of a multiplier, mm-hmm. which it has to be. I can't see any other way.
No.
Then I assume that multiplier is affected by the individual person and their circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
So what can we do to increase that multiplier? Is it like if the person's happier, if the person is well rested? It's like, okay, I bought an electric car recently.
Uh-huh.
And that's going to sound irrelevant, but hold with me.
Okay.
And I was learning about fast charging, mm-hmm. right? And you can charge faster, put more kilowatts through the system if it's at lower battery capacity, if it's at lower charge,
mm-hmm.
or if it's colder. So yes. As you fill up your battery, your charging rate decreases because it's getting fuller and it's getting hotter.
Yes.
Same concept here, I assume, where when people are getting tireder, they're able to cede less will,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Luke, this has the potential to flip this pyramid entirely on its head, because you also have to consider that the multiplicative effects are compounded as you go up the pyramid, right? So if I get even like a 0.2% increase multiplier for my low level Octavius group,
mm-hmm.
that compounds like a crazy amount as you go up the levels, because you're starting with like a higher base, like a compounding investment, Luke. You've started.
You think
with
compounds though?
Well, okay, yes, because here's the thing. Our upper levels already have this multiplier, right?
Yeah.
So let's say we have a baseline of 1 for all of our Octavius, whatever, right now. And our Septimus yeah. are like 2 times 2 multiplier. Okay?
Okay.
So if the 1 then becomes a 1.5, now you're doing like 2 times 1.5 plus like all the other 8, and then you're multiplying that by like 4 for the next level up. Right?
I don't know. I think it's only compounding if you do it for everyone. Because if it's, I think if you just increase the efficiency at the bottom level, it's just a flat percentage increase.
Okay, yeah, I think you're right.
Either way, still, let's do that.
I don't think they're going to do that, Luke.
I don't think so either.
Can I talk about, real quick, one of the things that probably ups the multiplier for our... whatever they are, sextiuses and above. The sunglasses, Luke.
Ooh, yep.
The fact that you can only get, you're only allowed to wear sunglasses if you're a certain level. It's got to up your multiplier.
That's got to help for sure. Yes, totally agree.
Not only, I mean, it's mostly a cool factor, but it's a very cool factor.
Well, that's part of the multiplier. Mm-hmm. If you feel cooler, right? You're seeding more will.
Right. Right.
I think.
Gotta be.
You're able to channel more will. It's all a confidence thing.
Seems that way. Seems that way, yeah.
But just baseline thing here is, God, it would suck to have to give up half your will / energy.
Every day?
Ugh. Terrible. Okay.
Anyway.
have we gone into the weeds enough for you?
Yeah, we gotta get out of here, Luke.
Okay. Actually, I have a small question. So they kind of emphasized the whole birthright thing.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is it super different from just like a no murder rule?
My understanding is that it's like more intense than that, because it doesn't sound like they have an exception for like self-defense, because what my understanding is, like, the Papa Quintus was getting attacked, like was about to be attacked by these people,
right,
and knew it, and like killed one of them out of self-preservation. It wasn't just like he was murdering them because he didn't like them. It was like, these are dangerous people and I need to neutralize them quickly. And so I think at least the cultural expectation is that like even that is not allowed. I guess I'm assuming only under the most dire of circumstances could you like kill someone. Even in self-defense.
I think I agree with you that this is I was trying to figure out if there was like almost a more like spiritual way of talking about it, which maybe there is, but I don't think I can quite put my finger on it yet. But I do agree with you that it seems to be, there's fewer exceptions.
Yes. Yes. Which,
or maybe just like fewer gradations.
Right.
Right. There's not like first degree, second degree, third degree, manslaughter, negligent manslaughter. There's not all of those.
Correct. Correct. Okay. Well, look, but then, you know, we say that, but then there are these like fights that happen, right? There are like physical brawls that happen,
right?
People for sure die in those, right?
Probably.
People die in physical fights in the United States in the year 2025. People are dying in these fights, these like gladiator style fights. They don't seem to care that much about that.
True, true.
So.
Okay. Tough to say. We'll come back to
We're
it.
We're going to have to circle back. Hear more. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of inefficiencies we talked about with this government, but I think the other thing which was sort of touched upon in this section was that there's a lot of taxes to not getting married, and so of course that Papa Quintus would be married because he's way older than the 23 necessary. I just think that's an absurd policy position to have, of like, we're gonna make it really expensive for you to not be married.
Right.
Because, like, how do you enforce that at all? Like, what does that mean at that point?
My assumption is that they do this because they want a really high population.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because the higher population, the more... It's a pyramid scheme. So the more people they have under them. So... and this is just the blunt instrument that they're using, I guess, to increase population.
Do you think divorce is illegal?
For sure.
Okay. That makes sense then. Then I guess this could work.
You think they're leaving no-fault divorce?
Well, I just mean, like, if I hit 23 and I'm not married yet, but I'm like, I don't want my taxes to go up 300% next year, I'm going to just find a person who'd be like, are you unmarried too? Are you also 23? Do you want to just say that we're married and then we can, like...
I didn't see, but was there a thing about having kids too, though?
They have, like, incentives for it. They, like, encourage it.
Okay.
But they're not going to increase your taxes, I don't think.
Oh, okay. That's weird.
Yeah. Just, like, give them a child tax credit or something, guys. If you want more kids, make them cheaper. It's an easy solution.
Easy. Yeah. No, it's a weird system, but I also I'll leave that for now. Okay. Maybe we'll come back to it when we learn more. The first thing, this is somewhat related, but I'm cutting kind of to the end here. The first thing I thought of when this guy tries to bring his daughter.
Yeah.
To the training classes.
Yeah.
Was a boy girl sleepover? But I am curious if they're like, we gotta get these folks married quick.
See, that's funny, Luke, because the first thing I thought of when this strange man showed up to the manor, this strange, powerful man showed up to the manor in the bathhouse wanting to see the young boy that they've just adopted, was like, oh no. Guys, this is not allowed, right? We don't allow this,
right?
You don't allow this, right? So there's gonna be some supervision in there, right? No, that's specifically why he chose the bathhouse, because there'd be no supervision.
Of course, why would there be supervision in the bathhouse?
Oh no.
They haven't. Yeah, that's a bad look.
It's a bad look.
That should be the assumption.
Probably. Correct. Yeah, correct.
When someone requests to meet a child in the bathhouse.
Yeah, alone. Oof.
Oh, boy. Okay. Dan, what do you think as a teacher?
Good. Yeah.
What do you think about, I believe her name is Lanistia?
Yeah.
What do you think about her teaching style?
Ooh, I think she's going to get very poor teaching evaluations.
Ooh.
Not saying this from experience or anything, but I have a feeling like some of her students are going to think she is disrespectful.
Okay.
And not actually teaching them anything.
Dan, this is how you get results, though, Dan. You're forgetting that if you only have a small time... Uh-huh. And you want people to learn a lot in that small time, it's all about how mean you are to them.
Luke, I will say she's employing a lot of really well established active learning techniques.
Okay. Love active learning. Mm-hmm. Got to ask questions.
She's doing frequent assessment, which is really important. Frequent assessment with feedback, it sounds like. Granted, it's a little bit cryptic. I would be a little bit more clear with your feedback if I were you, so that your students really know in the moment like how well they're doing, because that is uh-huh. the best way for them to improve. It seems like they're getting a diversity of viewpoints, which is great.
Mm.
They're getting a lot of hands-on experience. We're designing these like really intricate demos for our students to really play around with and explore, which you know, I think there's a lot of sound teaching strategy here.
Okay. Good. I'm glad to hear that. I was a little bit worried about the maybe like psychological approach that we were taking here. It felt like we were doing the whole withhold praise so that they want to what's the phrasing I'm looking for? So that they work extra hard to please the teacher and then become
like dependent.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, that, yeah, there's good evidence about that. There's also really good evidence that threatening to choke the life out of your students unless they answer the questions correctly is a effective strategy.
Yep. Yep. I've heard good things about that as well. So all in all, great job.
All in all, I'd say this Viz is getting set up for success, is what I'm saying.
Good.
And Luke, speaking of the teaching situation, did you scope out the security on campus? Because, man, if our college campuses were this secure, I'd feel a lot safer as a faculty member. I'll just say that.
give me a rundown of their security.
Okay, Luke. They have like a giant wall that surrounds the campus. They have guards at the front with the only entrance checking people's IDs. And there's like a one ticket entry. So like you give them your ticket and they let you leave, but you don't get a new one. So you don't have like a continual pass to come in and out.
This is at the academy.
The academy. Yes. Then they have like a really intricate testing, like a detector to make sure you're not bringing any dangerous will imbued items onto campus.
Right.
I mean, sounds very secure.
Pretty safe in there.
Sounds pretty safe in there, as long as, you know, you're not messing around, getting on anybody's bad side.
Right. Certainly not safe from the other students or faculty, though.
No, or the president.
Yeah.
But from outsiders, seems pretty safe. Nobody's getting their cars broken into in the parking lot on campus, is all I'm saying.
Okay. That's a good point. That's what we're all worried about these days.
Yeah. But also pretty insane, I think, that the security is this high. No?
Yes, I would agree.
Like, what? What are we doing here? There's definitely something going on, right?
It's like, what are you protecting against?
What are you hiding?
Well, but like, it's not really, the walls and stuff aren't really like protecting against. I was thinking the walls are there to prevent access by like an army, but I guess they are also there to protect against just like someone sneaking in
or sneaking out. We don't know. Look,
it does seem shady. He's very shady also.
Luke, if I heard that like a girl down the hall from me had her eyes burned out in her last class, I'd be trying to leave. Okay.
Yeah,
I'd be like, maybe this is.
Yeah, but
for
you need to earn a ticket to leave, Dan.
Yeah, I'm hopping the fence.
It feels like so they're preparing him for this academy really intensely.
Yeah.
And they've given him like an idea of some things that they're doing. So like they're cheating with this little labyrinth thing. But I still feel like they're not really describing what the academy is particularly well. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Where I'm still like, how'd you get your eyes burned out actually?
Right. Like, do you take classes? What is my schedule going to look like?
Yeah.
Do
I just do well in the tests and this labyrinth thing, or am I like, is it like number of eyes I've gouged out?
On a scale of like Harry Potter to Red Rising, how many students die every year? Because we know it's going to be at least a couple.
Of course.
But is it a lot?
Are we talking 3/4?
Right. Right. Oh boy, yeah.
What do you think about the opportunity that was presented that and turned down of being trained by this other group?
Bad. Don't do it. How the fuck would they know?
Okay. Yeah, but it's cooler,
I think. No, it's not cooler. It's cooler.
She has a cool arrow.
One cool arrow? You just rode on a flying train.
Okay.
No. No.
And he is like they're kind of not good at things.
Yeah, like everybody hates them as well. And he knows that they're training him to do something he does not want to do.
Right.
So I think he made the right choice. I say you don't go with him.
Okay.
Curious to see what happens at this weird aqua battle thing, though.
Yep. I am too. Looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
What is the cost of this? Also,
Luke, I think we're gonna have to learn to stop asking that question because it's just high is the answer.
It's a lot. Yeah.
Okay. It's high, and we've already kind of seen the cost in the sappers and the poor people just shuffling around.
Right.
The zombie people.
Okay. Okay. We'll leave it at high. Mm-hmm. Expensive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so cost is high, Luke. If you couldn't tell from this episode, Luke and I need some answers. We need to do some math. Okay. Yep. And we need some answers about how this stuff works. I'm hoping we get some soon. And so we're going to continue on, read the next quarter for next time, get us to about halfway. Hopefully we go to school by that point.
Yep. Learn some facts.
Get some knowledge. Maybe we'll even come up with some hot takes.
And keep being dumb nerds.